There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
12:07, and here we go, the Friday Eve edition of Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106 for a phone call or a text. And a reminder, too, I've got some of those in this morning. You can leave those talkback messages when you use the FM Talk 106.5 app, which is free and pretty cool. It's waiting for you right there on the front page of the app, and the app is free if you go to... If you're an iOS user, you go to the App Store. If you are an Android user, just go to Google Play. I guess we didn't get caught up in the antitrust legislation with Google and Google Play and all that, so I think we're still good. I wish I could, wish I had enough flex to have some kind of worry of antitrust, but no, just go to either of those places and look for FMTALK 1065, and you'll see our logo. That's the app. Download it and enjoy. It does a lot more than just a talkback feature. We can get into that later. I do know this. So Ben sat down in the studio and opened up the Twitter feed here, which is at FM Talk 1065 on Twitter, or X. And I guess I'd been searching, you know, last night on that. You know, I've been searching news from Hurricane Milton. And so it's going to, you know, the algorithm's going to feed you. So I actually saw this last night, but the first thing it feeds to me, with all, and Leanna was pointing out, we've got some crazy pictures on our Facebook page, damage in the aftermath of deadly Hurricane Milton. Interesting that it's the what we have heard so far with the deaths that came from the other coast, the East Coast, over St. Lucie, with those tornadoes, so many tornadoes being spun off of Milton. But the first picture I get on my feed is this guy. I saw him last night. Maybe if y'all are on social media, you've seen him. The Florida crackhead. Now, do I, is this, did this actually come from the oncoming Milton? Was it an old pic? Either way, I've got questions here. And I don't know how, I'm thankful I don't know how a crack pipe works. But I'm interested if that thing he's got, if y'all have seen this picture, is that a lighter? Because if there's a, if there's a lighter, and I have good camping lighters and in an emergency kit, ones that'll work wet and all that stuff, but the winds look like they're blowing, I don't know, in this picture, 50 miles an hour or so, and the Florida man is smoking crack outside his house there, because you wouldn't want to smoke crack. I mean, if you're going to smoke crack, go on out to the front porch. He's standing outside. I mean, it's blowing him along the front yard there as the winds are intense enough. But the lighter can still light the crack from this. So I really, if anybody knows anything, can you detect, is that a lighter? It looks like some, I don't know what that thing is, but I want it. Not the crack pipe, but the lighter that will work in 50 or 60 mile per hour winds. And you can see that picture. Maybe we'll just, I'm going to retweet this. So if you follow us at FM Talk 106.5 on X or Twitter, if not, you can go and do that. So you can see this. You can help me understand what's going on here as this guy is smoking crack outside. Very Florida thing to do. Oncoming storm. He hasn't evacuated, but he's going to smoke some crack. I guess that goes together, right? The person that doesn't evacuate, if they're close to the storm, would be the person I would think would might be a candidate for smoking crack. But that's on there. Check that out. All right. And coming up in just a little bit, was it a pretty interesting story in international news? I know there's been some discussion on the previous two shows about what's going on with Israel and Iran. They're calling, is it an earthquake, or did the Iranians do something else? because there's been a report of an earthquake in Iran. Some people out there say, maybe not an earthquake, maybe a nuclear test by Iran. A little show of force. We'll talk about that and more of what's going on in that region when my buddy Jonathan McConnell from Meridian U.S. joins us about 12:30. Also, Dale Leach from Land Yap coming up today. So that's all on the way for the show. I thank you, Fire Dog. So Fire Dog texted this in at the end of yesterday's show. And if you missed it, we were talking to Spanish Fort Mayor Mike McMillan about the work to be done on the causeway, because the causeway is going to take a lot more traffic when people start avoiding the toll on the one day to be completed, maybe I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. Plus, if there's an accident on the Bayway, all the traffic goes on the causeway. And some of the things with ALDOT that they're going to do to try to make it work better going across the causeway. And then I think it was Marty had texted in. I think he wanted his ashes. He was asking if his ashes could be spread on the causeway. He would rather have them there than the Bayway. He'd rather always take the causeway. And then I went a step further for Marty. I said, before we just spread your ashes on the causeway, why don't we build a funeral pyre there alongside the causeway and put you on it and burn you right there in the funeral pyre for people to enjoy as they're going down the road, you know, if you're picking your own funeral. Then Fire Dog got this text in a little too late as we closed out the show, and I was so impressed by the text. I said, yeah, we will hold this over for tomorrow. And we have. He said his idea for a funeral procession on the causeway. This is beautiful. So I had talked about Marty should be at the funeral pyre. Fire Dog said he wants his funeral procession to be in a 22-foot-tall truck that goes through the Bankhead Tunnel. There you go. Instead of burning you on a pyre, would we, Fire Dog, I think we would have you in the area that then impacts the front of the Bankhead Tunnel. So the funeral procession would be go through, and you would be in the, and then boom, you would go right, and then there'd be a piece of you or pieces of you in the Bankhead forever. So when family members, loved ones ride by, they could say, look, that's, there's a little bit of Fire Dog right there in the overhang for the Bankhead Tunnel. So there you go, Fire Dog. Yes, that was a beautiful thing yesterday. So I appreciate that. All right. A lot of texts already coming in here. The huge tornadoes. Yes. Yeah. Dan, that was incredible to see the size of those tornadoes hitting. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of pictures now and video coming out of Florida and the impact area. I definitely have seen more things that look like, do not know, but look like tornado damage than just straight line winds. And it really rocked some people in Florida from, you know, that were away from the coast with that. Interesting thing, too, I saw a heat map they do for power outages. And I was looking at this, I told you I got friends there. Friends in Tampa don't have power. My buddy lives in Orlando, which was part of the track as Milton crossed Florida. He said, yeah, man, we never lost power. We never lost internet. So they were doing good there. But I looked at this. It's, you know, how they'll show you a heat map of a state or a country or whatever, show you more of this, more of that. And so if you look at this, and it shows Florida, and you can see by the colors on this map how many customers of whatever is Florida Power and Light or whatever other utility is there are out of power. So it makes sense. You look at somewhere like Sarasota County, right there where landfall was, 75% of the customers are out of power. You go up to Tampa, 72%. All right, so this is the front line of this. Makes sense. You go inland east to Hardy County, which is inland from Sarasota, 98% of their customers are out of power. Okay. Then as you track the way the storm crossed Florida, you would think, maybe be inaccurate, you would think there would be less impact, you know, on power. But as you go further, you've got places like the Orlando area, hardly affected, 14% of their people out of power. You go further east to Volusia County, it's like 50%. And then you go up to Flagler County on the coast, on the east coast north there, 68% out of power. So it is interesting. I don't know if it's a study of maybe tornadoes in those areas, because the storm, right, has less strength as it crosses the landmass. Or is it one of different utilities and different grids? And it got me thinking. So I guest hosted a show out of Huntsville today, and I was talking about this on that show. do we rethink in Florida and other places how we do power grids? Now, I saw this has been years ago in Puerto Rico, and I forget, I know there's Coast Guard members here that probably work down there can remind me what hurricane it was, absolutely ravaged Puerto Rico and their power infrastructure. They went back in, and they, instead of making the grid more connected, they balkanized it. They made it less connected. Now, I don't know how the implementation has been going forward, but the idea made a lot of sense to me. Instead of having a grid that's so connected that a tree falls a mile from you, you know, or a transformer blows a mile from you, then you're out of power, they made the grid smaller and nodes that were independent of the grid over there. So instead of, you know, like everything in the world now is tied all together, but I'm seeing a change going the other way too. I see it in food as people look for more local ways to produce food. Internet, look what Elon Musk is doing with Starlink, right? Instead of being part of a bigger grid, it's independent, it's localized. It's same thing here on the power side in Puerto Rico. And it was really interesting, and we might dig into this and see how they fared with it. But this idea was that they would take the power grid and separate it from all its pieces. So you could affect one part, maybe have a power outage there, doesn't affect everybody. Just interesting stuff got me thinking about it in the aftermath of the Hurricane Milton. And of course, the next thing we'll hear, if we hadn't already heard it, when they get done with like saving human beings, which is number one, then when it comes to property that was damaged, how long until you think the insurance companies are going to start screaming about not being able to insure people in Florida? Don't think it's going to take long. All right, be right back. More on this. We could talk about steering hurricanes and a whole lot more. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1222 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you along. Also, speaking of the aftermath of Milton, we've got the real stories there as people are just beginning to like stand up and think about the recovery effort there in Florida. On top of that, though, to challenge them, you know, you can't have a hurricane without a follow-up alligator story, right? This is like it's formulaic, like you hurricanes and then the national media says, and, you know, people. So this is from Daily Mail. And they got some pictures of an alligator biting a tire on a vehicle. But the headline here, this is just, I mean, I'm not a headline writer by trade, but says alligators are stalking homes in floodwater after catastrophic Hurricane Milton barreled through Florida. Now, stalking, so are they stalking the homes? Is it they're trying to bite a 3-2 ranch house somewhere in, you know, Dunellian, Florida or something? Or what are they trying to do? But yes, of course, you got to have, if you have a hurricane, you have got to have an alligators on the land story. And I'd like to point out, you flood a bunch of stuff, and land critters go to find dry land. You flood a bunch of stuff, the critters that live in the water, obviously alligators can live, you know, walk and run on land, but it's an easier thing to do to just swim. They're all moving around. The critters are moving around, finding, you know, looking for real estate options out there. So, yes, but in the headlines, they are stalking homes in Florida. All right. Thank you, Jace. That probably was Maria. He's at Maria in 2017 that throat punched the entire island. It's an older story, and I just think it's interesting, and I don't know that this will happen in Florida, but after Maria, Puerto Rico gets ravaged with their power grid. And somebody actually had a novel idea there. How it was implemented, I don't know. It's Puerto Rico. But instead of further connecting the grid, they said, what if we disconnected it? What if we made smaller footprints for this grid and for power? So if somebody a mile away has something happen, you lose a transformer, has a tree comes down on the line, those people right there are affected. But the people further down the line aren't. And I think it's pretty interesting. I don't know if they'll try to, I mean, it's going to be, you're going to have a sea change moment to do something like that. So I don't know if places in Tennessee and Western North Carolina, we have that moment to look at how we do the power grid and do you separate it out. But yeah, so this is, so thank you, Jace, for that. Fire Dog says my sister in Dade City, Florida, about 30 miles northeast of Tampa, has no power, but her house is undamaged. It is interesting to look at where on that heat map there are places, and I wonder if it's different utilities or different infrastructure, because you'd expect, and it is, like in Sarasota County and Hillsborough County, right there where they took the brunt of Milton, 75-85% of people out of power. But then you look at some places that are further east where you would think you would have less damage, they're higher than places on the coast. And then there's places like around Orlando, Orange County, that have like only 14% out. And then you go further to the coast, like Volusia County, and then they have 70% out. So I don't know what to make of it. It just stood out to me. Tim says, a lot of companies, especially the bigger ones, are connected by their transmission lines, but they are sectionalized, by meaning they have switches here that can be automatically opened up so everybody's electricity doesn't go out. This is that's a good thing. But what about even further disconnecting it? And I know, you know, we're in this world interconnected, right? It's the internet and everything. But at the same time, look no further than the idea of Starlink, right? And what Elon's done. Grid don't matter, man. You know, you can crank up the Honda generator there and hook up the Starlink if you're in the mountains of Western North Carolina. And guess what? You've got internet. That is where I think if we could take that kind of mentality when it comes to power, we might be better off dealing with this stuff long term. U-Haul Man said power poles are being phased out for underground utilities, less susceptible to tropical and tornadic weather. Also, less power poles are safer for people driving around looking at their phones. Thanks for the work y'all do. That is true. U-Haul Man, I've been in a year-long, it's been a year, that Alabama Power supposedly, we signed the contract, or signed the okay easement thing. They're supposed to be removing the power poles. So I live back in the woods and go down a dirt road to another dirt road. And I may or may not have counted the power poles because there's a chance I could get them once they remove them. But there's a lot of power poles on the way. And they came to us and said, hey, we want to do underground power there. And so the plan is to run underground power from Airport Boulevard the whole way back to where I live back in the sticks. So that's interesting. So I'm one of those people. At the same time, I had a rental house in Country Club Village there. And 2-3 years ago, they did the same thing there. A lot of trees in that neighborhood. A lot of trees. And I guess they were tired of fixing lines when they came in. So underground is great, too. But if you could underground, and then if you have to come up at a point, if you could grid that off and separate it, I think it probably makes it easier on the power company long term, but makes it better for people out there. Yeah, so Jim said, yeah, the power system has set up with circuits. I get that, but they have further separated. This thing in Puerto Rico, I will pull up this old story, and maybe on tomorrow's show, if not early next week, and we'll go through it. The way they were doing it was very interesting to me. It was some novel thinking, which gets me to pay attention. And I do wonder if we do more of that somehow, instead of everything being connected part of a grid, we can actually start separating from grids out there. All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, my buddy Jonathan McConnell from Meridian US is going to join us. One of the questions I'm going to pose to him, I'm sure he's excited about this, is the story that came out, I guess, over the weekend. So, okay, there was an earthquake registered in Iran. Okay, it says it's 10:45 p.m. on Saturday. The University of Tehran's, and their team this year is fantastic. I mean, the new coach, rebuilding. They've lost a couple games, but they're really turning that program around. University of Tehran Seismography Center announced a 4.4 magnitude earthquake had shaken the city of Eridan in Iran's Semnan province. I was probably butchering that. With tremors also felt as far as parts of eastern Tehran. The epicenter of the earthquake, which occurred 12 kilometers. All right, any metric people can convert that for me. I should know that. I've learned that and I've forgotten it. 12 kilometers below ground were recorded, and it gives the lat long. Hours after the news broke, social media users, well, there you go, began speculating that the Tehran regime had attempted to conduct its first underground nuclear test, presumably as a deterrent measure against the Israeli attacks on its territory. So did they test it, or they just have a little plate tectonic shakeup? Well, that's one of the many questions I will level at Jonathan McConnell. He's on the way next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:33 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all here on this Thursday. And let's check in with our staff meteorologist and tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams. Dr. Bill, Milton, or what was called, is it still called Milton, and where is it?
It's still Milton, and it's headed east and picking up speed out into the Atlantic now. Showing us up to 20 miles per hour, which is pretty brisk for the forward motion of the storm. But it's moving away from the U.S. mainland. It's east of Cape Canaveral. And, of course, last night it tracked right across the heart of the peninsula and left the east coast in the Cape Canaveral area. At the moment, its highest winds are 80 miles an hour, but it's just going to continue to move east. And looks like it'll bypass Bermuda as a tropical storm and then eventually just fade out in the North Atlantic. But the impact of that storm, of course, is being felt over a large area. And they're still kind of looking at the damage and getting an idea of how extensive it was. The storm came in at around Sarasota, where the winds were 120 sustained and higher gusts. And we really don't know a lot about the damage there since people weren't allowed to go out and take a look at it, but they will be today and have a better idea. One of the big stories, Sean, has been the tornadoes. There were 126 warnings issued for tornadoes. And they formed mainly to the east and to the south of the center of the storm in what we call the feeder bands of moisture circulating into the system. And so there were numerous tornadoes. A lot of damage came from those. The rain, another problem, particularly just to the north of the center of the storm, where there actually was a weather front. And all that helped to produce some rather large rainfall totals. St. Petersburg came in with over 18 inches of rain, and it was not far from that in Tampa. And Tampa got quite a bit of flooding, and flooding occurred in other areas where that rainfall was double digits. The storm surge, don't know exactly how high it was in the Sarasota area. Hopefully we'll find out. It was not as high in Tampa Bay, mainly because the center of the storm came in just south of Tampa. And therefore, for a long period of time, they had an offshore flow, and that lowered the water in Tampa Bay. So the damage they had was basically from wind and, of course, heavy rain in that urban area. And so there's a lot we need to know, and we'll find out about the damage, and which help us also figure out some of the things about the storm itself.
Yeah, it looks like, I guess we'll still get the pictures in from storm surge and all that, but the ones that I've been seeing, like you mentioned, tornadoes. So many tornadoes, and deadly out there as well. East Coast, like you said, to the south and east of the storm, not even where the storm made landfall.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the saving things for everybody was the wind shearing that took place, because as that storm gained latitude, gets farther north, and this is going to happen with most storms, the farther north they go, the better the chance they will start to be affected by the westerly winds across North America. And those upper air winds will guide the storm along. But if they become too strong, then they start to tear it apart. And, of course, we obviously hope that it will tear it apart. But those upper air winds were encountered as it started to approach the central portion of the peninsula. And it dropped those winds down quite a bit to where they were 120, as opposed to 24, 36 hours earlier, they were up to an incredible 180-mile-an-hour sustained winds. When it was down near Yucatan, that would have been an entirely different story had we looked at 150, 160 mile per hour winds.
We appreciate you keeping us ahead of the storm the whole way through and in the aftermath of it now. And we will check back with you because if people didn't realize it, we still got a little bit of time in hurricane season. It isn't over yet.
That's right, exactly. We have the rest of October, and we have had some storms around in November.
All right, that's for sure. Dr. Bill, we appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there's our staff meteorologist and tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams, on the on Hurricane Milton. Although I could ask this guy, I mean, because he's read in a lot of things, mostly when I deal with a Marine and a business owner of Meridian U.S. and my buddy Jonathan McConnell, we talk about international politics, realpolitik, and warfare. Good to have you back on the show.
Always good to be here, Sean.
Okay, so we have not on air had a chance to talk since the last time we talked. I said, "Hey, man, do you think Iran's going to, you know, respond to this Israeli, you know, the assassinations and all that?" Because remember, the news cycle was any day now, right now. And you were one. Jonathan said, "Nah, they'll probably sit on this for a while," and they did. They sat on it for quite a while here before they launched their latest missile salvos.
Yeah, I was surprised. I'll say this. Israel and Netanyahu have finally taken the platform that they've gotten. And, I mean, they're playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers. I mean, when they did the walkie-talkie pager thing where they blew those up, so they took away their communication capabilities because that's how Hezbollah was communicating in Lebanon. And basically they would... That's how they communicated because it was, I guess, on a different band or frequency from cell phones. So it was a little bit not easy to track. And so Israel figures this out, buys a company, and sells these pagers to them with these explosives in it. And then one day just hits them all. So then you hit the pagers, then you hit the walkie-talkies, and then it's like, well, we've knocked out all of our communication, and now we've got to go to a meeting. And they go to the meeting, and they blow the building up.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is just...
It's brilliant. So in your world, like as a civilian, I sat here slack-jawed texting you going, did you just see that? You know, and then in your world, I mean, they won if there was the annual intelligence operation awards.
Oh, yeah.
They won every category?
They've won every category, especially since they did they hit the guy, the Hamas leader in Iran.
In the secure compound, right?
Yeah.
Israel plays a long game, man, because I don't know how long those, you know, that munition was set in that compound. They didn't just walk in there and do
months.
It. So
it had been months.
And then, like you talk about, to get the company to provide the pagers and the two-ways, the walkie-talkies and all this, and don't you know there had to be, to make it seem real, there had to be negotiations, and I don't know if I can get you all those by the 15th, and all that kind of normal stuff to get the buy-in, right? If I'm the Mossad agent,
some guy try to put it on layaway too.
Yes, can you imagine? Like that's the story I would love to know too. Is the Mossad agent or agents that ran that company? Did they to stay believable? Did they not agree with everything? Like I can't get them to you right now, but I tell you what, if you know, I can discount these, but I can't discount those. I wonder if that's
really
kind of
good pink bottle, you know.
Yes,
you know, I'll say this. I wanted to wear a pager around for a while if I could found one just for giggles. It'd have been a lot of fun, but no. I mean, I think Israel's done a. Mossad has definitely gotten the intelligence agency of the year award. I think, which with what they, I mean. And the funny thing is, they're like, some things happen. You know, like the way they play it off is hilarious.
So. Of course, the other thing I want to say is what it was like back at headquarters when that happened. I mean, where they'd run down the halls going, it's like some big football game or something. Like, you did it, man. Patting them on the back, whoever came up with the idea. So that part of it is brilliant and is acute, is not ham-fisted. Iran? Ham-fisted. Here come the missiles, and at the same time, you have Hezbollah shooting rockets right across the line. Now, that's the one that would worry me, and I want your opinion on it because there is time to track when you launch from Iran incoming for Iron Dome to work. But somebody can get pretty. I know Israelis have moved into Lebanon and given a secure zone. I think that's probably so you can't get. So the rocket has a signature because if you're right across the border and I'm firing, there's no Iron Dome that can hit that, right?
Well. The point of origin is when it's right there on the southern side of Lebanon, just north of the Golden Heights, then at that point, I mean, your response time is so quick. So you can do mortars. But yeah, that's why a lot of the Israelis have moved down away from the border and, you know, away from areas that are not safe.
Yeah, the longer that projectile, missile, rocket, whatever is in the air, the better that something like Iron Dome gets to work.
That's right. Yeah. You know, in I think with Israel invading, well, not invading, I mean, they did a ground incursion and in taking away the safe spots. I mean, I can't imagine what kind of yield they got from getting the weapons caches that are down on, you know, along the border where all the rockets are being fired from. So, you know, are we about to start another world war? It would actually be very interesting because, especially with, it seems like the rest of the world is not. I mean, how far like France, Macron has come, like denouncing and like holding up arms sales to Israel and everything like that. I'm like,
at the same time, this is the same French president that wants to put French troops in Ukraine.
Yeah,
he said.
Yeah, well, because he's more. Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's the first time we've had a war in Europe in, you know, since World War II.
So it's, and the French have to try to do some makeup work from the last one.
Well, it's, you know, why are the streets in Paris lined with trees?
Here we go.
So the Germans can walk in the shade.
So as we, you mentioned this outbreak of World War III or wider regional war, you've heard my lament. And I worry, you know, so many of y'all that are veterans or more active duty folks, I worry about because we move more and more Americans into theater, more and more materiel. Got two carrier strike groups, right? I mean, we just keep it. It seems to me that it's almost putting it so close that it can't help but something hitting an American asset to give us a reason to come in there. I'm stand with Israel, supporting their right to defend themselves. You're the warrior here. I'm the civilian. I just don't want another war. I don't think it's worth Americans going over there to do a job that the Israeli boys can do for them and girls can do for themselves.
Oh, I think, I mean, Israel is handling it quite well right now. I mean, if honestly, if we could entice them to take out the nuclear capabilities of Iran, like that would win the day for me. Because at that point, we're completely not involved. Well, we are involved in the war, but it's not American sons and daughters that are sacrificing their lives over that. So I agree totally. You know, is Israel going to do that with as bold as they've been the last month? Maybe. I don't know if they can. You know, can they go 6 kilometers down? Or, hey, maybe Mossad is the one who did the earthquake. You know,
right.
Well,
that's my question, right? So it could be. I mean, that is a, you know, I know that this doesn't work on Twitter or on Facebook because they push back past anything they don't like. There is a seismic zone there. I mean, there is some probability that an earthquake could have happened there. But there's some probability that they could have been doing an underground detonation.
Yeah.
They've had their centrifuges and everything else deep underground. Hence, we had to use, well, y'all probably forgot about that 10, 15 plus years ago, the Stuxnet virus that somehow got in, you know.
Yeah.
And I love that one.
That was a great one, yeah.
That's some fantastic.
Set them back years.
Yeah. So that stuff, but is this, do you think, an earthquake? If it's not, did Israel do something there to make something detonate, or did the Iranians detonate it to say, we got it?
You know, I think that the biggest threat is like, how many mines does it take to make a minefield?
I don't know.
None, just the sign. Because if you have a minefield sign, and I don't think it would be Iran testing their nuclear capability, because if they did, I mean, and showing it off, like, they could just already say they have it. It also immediately puts them into the sanction category, back in sanctions. You know, so I guess they're going to give back the $120 billion Obama gave them. So
I'll be waiting for that to be flown in on a whatever they don't have a C-130, whatever they got, fly it in here.
I'm sure it'll be only in $1 bills. They'll be covered in glitter. I don't know how, and goat hair. But
so what do they do, Israel, going forward? Because, you know, you could deal – Gaza is one thing. You can take control of it, although I don't know how you want to take control of it long term, find some way to hand it off. You can feel good that you have castrated Hezbollah to some degree in Lebanon, you know, and yet the Lebanese army that is smaller than Hezbollah, and heck, there are members of Hezbollah that are also members of the Lebanese army, which is a bad situation, but you can at least get that. But Iran's sitting there. The seal is, they pop the top on the beer. They have been launching missiles at Israel, let alone attacking our people and Israeli and others in places like Syria and elsewhere. I mean, so Iran has worked a lot through proxies, but some of this stuff has not even been proxy work.
Yeah, no, Iran firing the missiles is not proxy by any means. And no. So, I mean, and so, like, they're in an open state of war, but, you know, like, but it's...
You just said it.
Yeah, they're in an open state of war.
That's what I think people dance around. To me, I look at it that way too. It's an open state of war. You just launch missiles into another country.
That's right. Well, obviously, only Congress in America can define what a war is or declare war.
But we can have all kind of
incursions all the time. I mean, like, I don't think Congress never even approved. When was the last time we've approved a war? I don't even know, to be
honest. I don't either.
I have to look that up. I'm a bad historian. I think that the Israel's definitely in a state of war. They have to be. Their back is up against the sea, and they've got every country around them that wants to push them into the sea. And so how do they deal with Gaza in the long term? Is it an occupation? I hope not.
I wouldn't want to be
That'd be a horrible, horrible situation.
Worst detail.
I mean, but you've got a very densely populated area of the world that you want it to thrive, but you also have 70% of the people in that country or in Gaza that absolutely just don't think you should exist. So how do you police that?
Yeah, I don't know how you police it. And I don't know going forward. I mean, if you are policing it, it's not, they're going to wait you out. It's not like, oh, we'll do 5 years and then we'll turn it over. Coming right back, more with Jonathan McConnell right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, back and more of our conversation with Jonathan McConnell, Meridian U.S. So not only does he have the experience as a warrior and Marine, he has friends and a company that's operating in the theater we're talking about. We got folks that are in harm's way.
Yeah, we're a little bit further south. I wish we could do some stuff in the Med. I really wish we would have like pirates of like Norway and Sweden, and like the Vikings back, because like I just would love to vacation there or at least visit there. But
you say like summertime, if the piracy could hit like the North Atlantic.
That's right.
And then summertime, move down to the Med.
The Med would be nice. Those two would be great.
Pirates, if you're listening out there, there's opportunities for you.
Listen, I'll recruit you.
But we'll put you on this side, then we'll be on this side. But you've talked to us the whole time. Here we are talking about the proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas. We're talking about the open warfare. And I'm glad you said that, because it seems like people push back. They launching missiles in there. It's open war. It's a war. But then the Houthis, another one of the proxies out there that give a lot of trouble, to shipping interest, let alone military.
But they're all aligned, right? So
right, they're all getting a paycheck from IRG. Yeah.
And so, I mean, Iran, the Houthis are Shia Muslim. Iran, obviously, is the Shia superpower or power in the region. And who wants to, supplant Saudi as the superpower in the Middle East? They want that dominance. That's why there's always been the rivalry between Saudi and Iran.
All your time there, do you think that the factionalization between Sunni and Shia is big enough to have what we were told almost happened with the Abraham Accords, to have the Sunnis go, okay, listen, we'll just accept Israel because we'd rather accept Israel than deal with the Shias?
That divide, the Shia Sunni divide is what goes back to what, the 7th century, 700 AD, after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. I mean, it is one of those things that is still amazing, because I think that you can still unify the Muslim world against the infidels, which you and I are, if you're in that state of war, which thankfully we're not in America, which is so nice.
Yeah.
There are some wonderful Muslim people in America, who I consider dear friends. It's the fanatics that are the problems, but we kind of have that here in America as well, frankly. But, I think that if we go back to, if a Western government invaded a Middle Eastern country again, I think that you would see some unity among the Sunnis and the Shias. I think that if we got involved with Iran, I think that you would see, maybe not openly, but I even think that
really,
I think
Arabs would back Persians in that case if we were involved against.
I think maybe not all the Arabs. I don't think MBS would.
Right.
I love MBS. I think he's been so good for the Middle East. I mean, women drive now. I mean, sure, he kills.
You chop up people. I've got my issues. But he's got the golf tour. What's wrong?
But women now can drive in Saudi Arabia because of MBS. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a vision for, 2035? He's like, listen, we need to be off oil because we can't do this forever. And I mean, the, he's... that's very sharp and forward-looking, whereas...
Well, he's already stacked up the money. It's easier to make the decisions when you're not worried about where the next paycheck comes from.
That's right. That's right. Well, and the prison at the Ritz-Carlton a couple of years ago was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to get locked up there for a long time. So,
you do believe that, and I don't want that to happen, but that's interesting, your perspective, that if there... I don't want to send it for multiple reasons, but that's another one there. But I don't know how you, if you're Israel, you can deal with Hamas, you can deal with Hezbollah, Houthis are down there, whatever. You may be able to castrate them. But Iran's still openly shooting missiles, has openly shot. Or is it an inevitable war between Israel and Iran before this ends? Or how do you find a stopping point?
But what is
an armistice?
What is a war? I mean, is it troops on the ground? Is it, hey, our flag's now over your capital?
How you define it? You're right.
I mean, and Iran and Iraq were in war for 8-12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which decimated both countries, mm-hmm. Frankly. And so, I mean, Israel doesn't have the ability to invade Iran. I mean,
right.
It's but. Can they shoot a bunch of missiles and decimate their economy? Can they decimate their nuclear program? I mean, yes, they can do that. But like, I know this is weird for an American to say, like, what are the objectives of the war? Because we don't seem to ever think about
that. Yeah, like, why? Why?
Yeah, like, oh, are we going to pull out? Yeah, let's do it tomorrow. Let's let everybody get killed on the airstrip. So,
yeah.
Sorry, a little sarcastic there, but
now there's 13 Americans dead because of that,
yep.
And so many others. But yeah, that one just decision at Abbey Gate. So where does this go, in your opinion, in the next 6 months? Where does this conflict go?
All the economists, especially on the shipping side, they say there's no change. We don't see any change in the long term, like in the next year. So insurance rates are still astronomical. You're looking at, even some shipping lines are banned from going through. Like the it's millions of dollars just to get the approval to go through, like the insurance to say yes, you still have hull and machinery insurance to be able to go through there. But like, if it's in any way not commercial, they don't let you go.
Wow. And that could go on, like they're saying, indefinitely. It's not like they're saying, now we got 6 more months of this.
Yeah, they're saying it right now. There's no long-term change, which is crazy. But look at, the Houthis shot a couple missiles at Israel and actually landed a couple in Tel Aviv a couple weeks ago. And then the Houthis responded and blew up Hadidah. They blew up their oil reserves and everything like that there. I mean, Israel just was like, hey, you mess with us, this is what happens. And you know what? They haven't shot any more missiles at them. It's one of those things when you do that, like walk softly and carry a big stick,
mm-hmm.
and you actually like, do something, they'll stop. This is a very solvable problem with the Houthis, but we got to have a spine in administration.
So maybe that spine's coming.
Someone that's, actually here with us today. So.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. We're hoping. Jonathan, as always, man, I appreciate it.
Good to see you, brother.
All right. I'll be right back.